Good morning. It's good to see everybody out. It's getting kind of hard to be appreciative of 90-degree weather in October. I'm working on it. I hope you all are working on it as well. I also read where we got a new moon this week. I don't know if you all seen that. There's another asteroid or something that's been pulled in, and it's going to be around for a few more days. But when I read that, the headline said, world to get a new moon for 10 days. I read that and I didn't even blink. Like after the last 6 years getting a new moon, that seemed like par for course, right? Well, of course we're getting a new moon. That seems pretty right to me. It is good to be here, and of course we welcome those that are joining us on Facebook, where we're finally done with Micah, at least for a little bit, and so we'll be moving on. In November 14th, 1970, was one of the most devastating tragedies that ever hit the sports world, at least as far as America is concerned. On that day, a plane crashed, killing 75 people, including the coaching staff, the players, support personnel for the Marshall University football team. Now, probably not all of us were here then, but some of you were, and maybe can remember that. If you weren't, you might remember the movie that Matthew McConaughey played in called We Are Marshall. And that movie's sort of about the aftermath of that plane crash. How are we going to rebuild? How are we going to find their identity? Well, what's it going to look like in the aftermath of this tragedy with this football team? And so whenever that is in your history, what does it mean and what does it look like? And so that movie portrays that they soon rallied around that cry that is the title of the movie. We are Marshall. Marshall is who they are, and they would define what that meant and what that looks like. But that rally cry was who they were. We are Marshall. And I'm convinced that for us, for everybody, but especially for Christians, identity is one of the most important things that we need to remember. We need to know who we are. Identity is key for so many things, because when you can define your identity, when you understand who you are or where you come from, then you can live in that identity. Because identity gives you purpose. Identity gives you meaning. Your identity gives you a path forward. If you don't have an identity, if you don't clearly understand what your identity is, you often get stuck in the way that's always been. But identity actually pushes us forward. Not just past something, it pushes us forward in light of the past. And so as we look forward as a church family here, we know we have some work to do. This is sort of that time of the year when we've always stressed inviting. Usually in times past, we would be planning for a friends and family day, and we would really push to invite people. Well, October 20th is that day of worship. That's our third Sunday. We could very easily call that a friends and family day, where we intend to pack this place as full as we can get it. That would give us a sort of a foot in the door to a lot of people in our community. And when we have that foot in the door, it's absolutely crucial, I think, that we remember who we are. And so today, let's remember that and the identity that Jesus has already put on his followers in the Sermon on the Mount. Jesus in Matthew gives a very clear and purposeful identity. And so let's kind of look at that a little bit this morning. We've already had that read. Matthew 5, Callan read it. Matthew 5, 13 through 16, Jesus says, "You are the salt of the earth. But if salt has lost its taste, how shall its saltiness be restored? It is no longer good for anything except to be thrown out and trampled under people's feet. You are the light of the world. A city set on a hill cannot be hidden, nor do people light a lamp and put it under a basket, but on a stand, and it gives light to all in the house. In the same way, let your light shine before others so that they may see your good works and give glory to your Father who is in heaven." So Jesus reveals our identity, And then he asks us to sort of own up to it. You got to be who you are. And so let's look at what he says. First off, he says, I am salt. He says, you are salt. And this is a plural, right? We here would say y'all. That's how we'd say it. Y'all are salt. That doesn't sound near as eloquent as you all are salt. So I'll stick with that. And we'll get to the definition and the understanding of that. But I want you to know that this is an imperative, what Jesus is saying here. He's putting the emphasis on this. It's not a question. It's not a question of, would you like to be salt? Would you like things to look a little bit different in your life? Would you like things to have a little bit more purpose or meaning for your life? A lot of times, that's how we sort of portray becoming a Christian, isn't it? We sort of ask this question of, would you like to, and then we fill in the blank. But this is an emphatic statement. You are salt. And there's two categories, right? There's salt and there's the earth. Jesus says, my followers are the salt of the earth. These are not the same thing. So the question as Christians, if you're a Christian, is not whether you are salt or not. The question is will you live in that identity of salt? Are you going to live up to your saltiness? Now, we'll kind of put a question mark there, because in our culture, we've sort of made salty kind of a negative thing, haven't we? That's not what I'm intending to do. For someone to be salty and lit is not exactly what Jesus is talking about when he's talking about salt and light. But the idea here is what we are being called to be. So what is the purpose of salt? It provides flavor. It still does, right? We get that. There's also a preserving quality to salt. And of course, this is well before the times of refrigerators, but before you had ways of being able to chill your meat with that. And it was quite possible that most of Jesus' followers, or a good chunk of them here at the Sermon on the Mount, that morning had already gone fishing and had packed their fish in salt to be able to carry it to the market to sell so it wouldn't decay. And so salt would help preserve the decay and dying. You are the salt of the earth. And that idea is the earth without salt decays and it dies. And if we're honest, we don't have to look very far, right, to see that decay that's going on. We can turn on our news and we can see that decay going on. We see where it's happening. We look at our school systems and we see that there's decay. We look at the business world and we see that there's decay. We just don't have to look very far in our world to understand things probably aren't going in the right direction, right? We're sort of in a coffin on roller skates going downhill. We're going faster maybe than we would like. The world is rotting, but Jesus gives us the command, go be salt. Go help a world that is decaying and dying so quickly that maybe you stop it from happening at least so quickly, or maybe through Jesus, it stops it altogether. You are salt that has purpose. Salt is actually a very stable compound, chemically speaking, right? It's really hard to break apart salt. That's the reason salt is what it is. It's actually just a really stable compound, chemically speaking, and that's wonderful. So there's a little bit of irony here to Jesus' statement. His question, well, what happens if salt loses its flavor? What happens if salt isn't salty anymore? And the irony is, like, chemically speaking, that can't really happen, right? But Jesus isn't talking to a bunch of chemists, or at least not chemists in the way that we do. But what do they know about this? But what Jesus is saying is when you dilute salt, say there's too much water in it, you lose it. It has no effect whatsoever. It's diluted so much. And so his question is what happens if it's no longer salty? It's useless, right? If salt is no longer salt, then it is good for nothing. And so you are the salt of the earth. But if you aren't salty anymore, If you've lost your saltiness, then you have no purpose. You were good for nothing. That feels like a pretty harsh reality. But that's what I understand Jesus to be saying here, that you're useless. But we are salt. That's our identity, that's our purpose, and our purpose is to hinder the decay of this world. Our purpose is to bring Jesus into every part of the earth that we are. And he's talking about our influence. Jesus is saying if we're going to influence the world, it depends on us being distinctive and not identical to the world. A lot of times when people look at Christians, when the world looks at people who proclaim the name of Christ, they don't see anything a whole lot different than the rest of the world, if they see anything at all. I think one of the clearest pictures of this is our divorce rate. I'm a firm believer of that. Like the ideal would be no divorce, right? That's the ideal, and I think Christians should be shooting for that ideal. And so you would think, in theory, that the divorce rate in the church would be much lower than the rest of the world. But that's not what stats prove. Stats prove the divorce rate within the church is the same as the world. Now, I'm not saying that divorce is the most unpardonable sin, and if you've been divorced, shame on you. Not at all. I want you to know that we grieve with you in that divorce. We recognize that divorce is a horrible cross to bear, and it's a hard thing for all involved. So it's not a shame on those who have gone through it. I want you to know this is more of an understanding. When the world looks at us, are we really that different? So let's maybe look at it a different way. I really like potatoes. I like when Jennifer has the baked potato bar. I can eat a lot of potatoes a lot, and I like baked potatoes. And the thing I like to do is I like to put a lot of salt on my baked potato. But let's say I don't. Let's say you get a potato and it's just bland, that there's nothing on it, no kitchen sink thrown on it, no cheese, no sour cream, no salt. It's just a potato cut in two, and you open it, and that's it. Have you ever had one of those potatoes? Those aren't very fun, are they? So you grab Missy's plate, and she's got some French fries, and I throw that on my potato. A different form of potato isn't going to make my potato better just because. It's the same thing, right? It's just in a different forms. And so a lot of times, that's what we've tried to do as a church. We've tried to propose to the world, well, I'll be a French fry in a baked potato world. I'm going to be a little bit different, but in reality, we're going to taste the same. We're going to be the same, but that's a problem, right? Because we've been called not to be a French fry in a baked potato world. We've been called to be salt that can bless both the French fries and the baked potatoes. We have been called not to just be a better version of the world, but I think a lot of us have tried to do that, to try to just be a better version of the world, but we need to be better than that. Our influence depends on our distinctiveness from the world, that we look different, that we are different because the church is different, because Jesus is different. Jesus is a truly counterculture idea. Rather than conforming to the patterns of the world, as Paul would say in Romans, but salt isn't our only identity marker that's in this passage. He continues on in verse 14 and says that you are the light of the world. A city set on the hill cannot be hidden. So first, we're salt. The second identity is light. And again, it's an emphatic statement. Now in John's gospel, Jesus will say, I am the light. But John's focusing on the I am statements of Jesus for a reason. Here in Matthew's gospel, Jesus is saying, you are the light. And sometimes that question of discrepancy or question of what's going on here, the thing is neither is wrong. Jesus is the light, and because Jesus is the light, Jesus' followers are also the light. There's no discrepancy in here in what's going on. This is our identity. And again, Jesus doesn't question, hey, show of hands, who wants to be lights, right? Here's a sign-up sheet for everybody who wants to be a light, and the sign-up sheet is for everyone, and then we'll tell you what it's like to be light. Afterwards, we'll get together, and we'll have some meetings about what it means to be light, and then we'll give you some tips and tricks about not being too bright, but also being just bright enough. You ever been to any of those meetings? And the reason I bring that up is because not too long ago, we just bought new light bulbs. Have you bought light bulbs lately? They tell you how many lumens there are. And I don't really know what a lumen is, but they put it in layman's terms. And so they've got like these pictures. Do you want easy lighting or do you want football stadium lighting? And I'll tell you what I pick every single time, right? It's going to be the football stadium lighting. I just want people to look at that house and say, like, is that the sun's little brother? You know, I want it as bright as I can get it. But what is the function of a light? That's an easy one, right? You walk into a dark room. Well, we typically go right over to a light switch and we flip it on. And if we don't have a light switch or you can't find one, we grab our phones and we use what little light we can get from our little screen or something like that. You're pulling up anything you can that will give you light because it dispels darkness. That's what light does, right? All light does is it dispels darkness. It's absolutely essential for life. I mean, this is the first words that we hear come from the mouth of God. It is, let there be light. That's the very first part of creation. So we need light. We need light to function and to survive. And you think about ancient cultures before modern conveniences like electricity, you can't just go and flip on a switch and lights are going to come on, right? And so in their culture, they had the sun, the moon, the stars, and then fire. I think those are your options for light, and maybe a couple of others here and there, but sun, moon, star, and fire. That's what they needed for light, and it was a process that they had to go through, and it was needed because if they didn't need it or they didn't have access to something that they would, I think they would understand darkness maybe better than we do. We have things in this time called light pollution. You know, maybe not necessarily here in Colcord, but even you get someplace like Gentry. We have so much light coming in our area that it drowns out the natural light of God. People talk about going to state parks and to different places to see the Milky Way. I think you can still probably find some pastures here in Colcord where you can see the stars in all their glory when it's dark. But it's becoming difficult, right? On July 13th, 1977, Time magazine titled that night, A Night of Terror. And on that night, there was a blackout in New York City. Lightning had struck a transformer, and so basically all of New York City was in total blackness on that one night, and there was so many things that were going on. Mobs broke windows and stores, just caused havoc. And so on one night, 4,500 people were arrested and some $61 million worth of damage happened in one night. And really all because it was dark. And that's what happens in a world of darkness. So what happens in a world of spiritual darkness? The world is shrouded by darkness. And that's what the devil wants to bring, right? Is darkness into this world. Because whenever there's darkness, we feel like we can hide things, right? We can hide the sin that light exposes. When there's darkness, we feel like we can get by with the things that the light so often exposes. And so we live in a world that is shrouded in that thick darkness. But Jesus says, as followers, we are the light. You are the light to the point the people to their way home. Christians are here to point people back to God. Following verse 15, he says, no one lights a lamp and puts it under a basket, but on a stand and gives it light to all in the house. The implication here is I cannot conceal the identity of who I am. I can try, but I never should. Jesus says, you are the light. It should never cross my mind to put a basket over this light. But the problem is that's what I often sometimes do. I think we all do, is we often hide or maybe conceal our identity in Christ. We get scared and we don't want the world to know exactly who we are, so we sort of try to hide. There was a preacher by the name of Dietrich Bonhoeffer, who was a well-known preacher in Germany during the Nazi regime. He's really, really against Hitler and all that, and he wrote a statement that I think is powerful. He says, a community of Jesus which seeks to hide itself has ceased to follow him. He's calling out fellow Christians that are hiding out their Christianity, but this applies to a community of believers that might together, that the community at large might not know who they are. That if we try to hide ourselves away, we've ceased to follow Jesus. So what does Jesus expect of us when he calls us light? Well, the expectation is to shine, right? To shine on, and don't let anything hinder you from shining. So he talks about baskets. And so as we continue using that understanding, we have baskets that get in the way of our light shining. I think the first basket we should remove is that of indifference. There should never be such thing as indifference or uncaring to a disciple of Christ. If we don't care that there are lost souls, not just in this world, but here in Colquitt or in the county or just in this area, continue on to the state, nation, and world, if we don't care that there are lost souls, then we're probably not following Jesus right. Because if you are light and that is darkness, you can't help but shine into it if you understand your identity. So we need to remove the baskets of indifference. We also need to remove the basket of fear. A lot of times we don't let our light shine because we're scared. We're afraid of what someone may think of us. We're afraid of the implications it might have in our relationships, with our jobs. We're afraid of so many things. And so we hide behind our fears. And we have all these baskets that we sort of put our lights under so we can still say, I'm shining, but no one's seeing, right? So here's the thing. If you're shining and no one's seeing, I think you're doing it wrong too. If you're letting fear stop you from shining on, remember, Jesus casts out all fear, and that's for a reason. And so the next basket is that of insulation. And maybe I'll explain that a little bit more. But lights don't shine simply for other lights, right? They don't shine to illuminate one another. They shine to dispel darkness. About 100 miles south where Jesus is teaching, there's the Dead Sea. And the Dead Sea is called that because nothing lives there. There's too much salt that supports life. And so maybe think about that, what our salt can do to darkness. But on the cliffs of the Dead Sea, there lived a community of people that had withdrawn from the wicked world. They called themselves the Essenes. And the irony of their title, the Essenes means sons of light. And their whole purpose was to escape from the rest of the world so that they could let their light shine amongst themselves, I guess. It's weird, right? Because lights are meant to dispel darkness. And I say it's weird until I realize that probably the place that we shine the most often is today, right? It is today here on Sunday mornings. It's not a whole lot different than them. We all gather in these four walls and we let our light shine for the glory of God, and then we go sort of to the rest of the week, and sometimes I put a basket over my head and I think I'm letting my light shine. Maybe you do something similar. So things are going pretty good now. This is a place to let your light shine. And yeah, we should here at church let our light shine, but we shouldn't stop, right, when we leave. We should keep that going. We should keep that going all through the week and going to the rest of the community that we're entering to when we go out to work, is to let Jesus continue to shine on. No basket will get in our way. Nothing can stop you when you follow Jesus. So Jesus concludes this little section by talking what it looks like for that light to have an influence. He says, in the same way, let your light shine before others so that they may see your good work and give glory to your Father who is in heaven. The light is our good deeds that we do in the world. When we enter into a place, people should feel a blessing from us, right? When we go to a community organization, a community gathering, we come into a restaurant, wherever we go, we should be bringing the salt, spiritual salt, into the community. The funny thing is, a recent survey on waitresses asked who they dreaded seeing the most. Do you know what the number one answer was by far? Christians after Sunday morning church. The comments were a bit entitled, maybe. They said they feel like they're entitled. Some of them are the biggest jerks that they ever come all week. And again, that's coming straight from the people that we're getting ready to see in just a few minutes, right? But if we're not bringing the salt and light in those situations, it sounds like we're being too salty and lit in those situations. Not the right kind of place. When we need to talk, when we walk in, I would love it if our restaurants in our areas felt blessed by us, saying, thank goodness, here comes those people. I feel so blessed by just getting to talk to them. They all ask me, how am I doing and how my week's going? They know my name, and if I have kids or grandkids, they shine a light in a way that is just contagious. That's who you are, right? That's who God has called us out to be, and it really does make a difference in the world. As Christians, you are salt and you are lights to a world that is decaying, and it needs salt for a world that is dark, and it needs lights, right? We all have struggles, and the world needs you. And I want you to think about that just for a second. If you've ever questioned your worth in this world, I want you to think about the people, not just who will miss you when you're gone. That's a way of thinking about it. But more so, how would they miss your conversations, your salt in the conversations that you have? How would your neighbors miss you and that influence that you bring into the neighborhood? How much more darkness in your little piece of the world would there be if you weren't there? And this is not arrogance that I'm talking about, right? It's saying, man, you know, this place would sure miss me if I was gone. That's not what I mean. It's not about me. We do these things for the glory of God, right? We let our light shine through so the good works that others may be able to see what's happening and glorify God because of it. I think whenever I don't do my job as a Christian, there's more people missing out on God, and God has entrusted me and God has entrusted you to be his ambassadors, his light, his salt. He has put so much worth in us, in our identities. He loves us so much. And so this morning, I guess I want you to take that identity with you beyond the walls of this building. Jesus would say that's on the Sermon on the Mount, but you just wonder how many people walked away from that sermon and saying, that's a pretty good sermon, Jesus, but did nothing with it. And so this week, let's be salt and let's be light. Let's live in that identity that has been called out to us from Christ Jesus. And so this morning, if you need prayers, we'd like to pray with you. Maybe this morning you came and you're ready to put Christ on in baptism. You are ready to become salt and light. The baptismal waters are ready for that choice. And so if that's what you came to do, if you need prayers, whatever your need may be, please come as together we stand and we sing.